You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast. We're going to talk about the crew in Salt Lake here in a few minutes. A game that was close to my heart because JV players got called up to the varsity. And I can relate to that. We'll get to that, but we got to talk about this Tigres thing. Follow along and see if you agree, because I was thinking about this afternoon. Okay. We are at Saucy Brew Works. The beer, the food, the coffee, it's all amazing. And you can even do your law school homework at Saucy Brew Works, as we just learned. I don't know what she's working on over there, but it's beyond my pea brain understanding.
Yeah, I was going to say, we let the smart people do smart people stuff. You. The rest of us will sit here and talk about soccer.
We'll talk about dumb stuff. Brett is here. Sam is here. I'm Brian. No Murph. He's in Europe. And no Bart. He's at a board meeting. He continually misspells board when he has a board meeting. B-O-R-E-D is what it sounds like to me.
As we often, you know, Bart, the C-suiter himself, Mr. Gulfstream, NetJets VIP, C-suiter himself, missing Massive Report. You know, don't let his proletariat leanings, okay? Don't let his proletariat leanings, you know, kind of
he's a big shot.
Misguide you a little bit. Homeboy's in charge of a lot. Very important person. I was smelling of rich mahogany.
I was thinking about this afternoon. I don't know why, but watched the various Hunger Games movies with my daughters and with my wife, right? And I started thinking about the crew as they relate to MLS. And it occurred to me that Don Garber kind of reminds me of the Donald Sutherland character in those movies, and that the crew are Katniss. Where, oh, well, she's doing very well in this competition, which, by the way, is horrific if you've never seen the movies. People literally killing each other for the entertainment of others. But he's happy to exploit her success, but his concern is that she's going to become too powerful, too big of a symbol, perhaps overshadowing the master plan that he has for MLS. And when we end tonight, I want your thoughts on this rumbling that we're going to change the DP rules again for certain clubs. We'll get to that. But am I off base here? Because I'm thinking that Don Garber is actually Donald Sutherland in the Hunger Games movies.
What's the name of it? Like, isn't it like the director or like the emperor or whatever?
I don't know.
I forget what his name
is.
It's
a dictatorship.
Yeah, not so benevolent dictatorship.
No, it's pretty grim.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
crew Katniss, if you will.
Crew Katniss. What's the volunteering is tribute? I don't know. It's
because here we are winning at Tigres, which nobody saw coming.
In spite of all of the efforts of CONCACAF at all, they move on.
Yeah,
wild.
And Miami does not.
How about that? Pablo Maurer and some of the guys from The Athletic had this great article about kind of that week in preparing for Messi and international competition, right? CONCACAF competition. And then there's this great excerpt in the article on The Athletic. I encourage you to write it. Where the MLS kind of powers that be, I revert to them as the glitterati in past. Uh-huh. I think that still is pretty apropos. Is in a meeting while the crew are playing Tigres, and they come out of the meeting and be like, "Holy shit, they're in penalties right now."
Wow. You can say shit on this podcast.
I know, but I enjoyed spelling
Doesn't
it for some
say
reason.
Everything.
And I'd gotten a couple of texts and messages about it, some DMs, and be like, do you think they had a meeting while Messi and Inter Miami? And I think that right there personifies all of the crap that we talk about that kind of flows downhill from all of the messaging, or I should say all of the actions that kind of run antithetical to some of the messaging, right? That right there is what we're talking about, people.
Yeah.
That right there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we got to get April's, you know, board meeting out of the way. Well, the crew are playing Tigres. Let's just throw that on the background.
Well, you know,
but that right there is what we're talking about.
It, right.
With
but, you know,
stuff.
I didn't expect this to happen either.
Yeah,
I gave us,
that.
I gave us no chance, and I'll be the first to admit it. When that that silly goal went in very early, I just threw my hands in the air and go, this is over. I think I texted you guys. So this is over.
I believe I was the only one on the pod who had the crew moving on. And I did tweet out after the game that I was going to dine out on this and be relatively insufferable for a certain period of time. I don't know what the statute of limitations is on insufferability, but I am going to push it for the next, month and a half or
I feel like we don't necessarily, we talk about, you specifically talk about being insufferable for, extended periods of time when you're right, but then you don't really,
Yeah, and then 48 hours later,
in your mind, I think you're being
complaining about the refs.
But you're not. Well, okay, MLS, I try not to think about those guys too much. Put this win into perspective in terms of crew history and then in terms of American soccer as it relates to the world.
It's I'll start with the second one first because I think the first one is actually a more interesting conversation than U.S. soccer. Take it out another 10,000 feet, American soccerdom, right? Which I think you throw both club competition and international competition under that same umbrella, right? It's the second most important American soccer win in domestic American soccer win in history. I think Seattle's CONCACAF Champions League final victory a couple of years ago is number one. For all of the reasons that it should be, poor Pat got on the wrong side of some Seattle Sounder fans' mentions late in the week, a few days ago. For I think trying to hit on the tone of it, that of course Sounders fans took the wrong way, which is
I cannot believe it.
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked that might happen. But they, what they achieved, how they achieved what they achieved was different than what the crew are currently doing. They did go to Mexico and get some results, so they deserve a lot of plaudits for that. And then obviously winning the whole thing is exceptionally impressive. But I think the improbability of what the crew did, specifically to how that game was played, speaks more to the first part of your question, which is the fact that you Aloy roomed a goal in the first 5 minutes of this game, no offense to the big man, maybe a little bit. We had a rough week on Twitter, too.
I feel like maybe that was more a Steve Clark to goal.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably more accurate. But it was very similar in my mind to the goal against Rayados a couple years ago, 2021. Which I believe was also in the third minute. It's the most important crew win in terms of quote-unquote regular season games, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about number one. Mm-hmm. Is it on par with the MLS Cup victories? Probably not, but those I think are in a select kind of opportunity of a comparison than this game. But we're talking about the most important result in the history of the club, I think, on a relative basis. And the fact that they did it in what might be, is probably a top three toughest atmosphere in North America and probably top 10 in the Western Hemisphere. I would maybe even go so far as to say top five. Mm-hmm. Argentina might have something to say about that. We can ask Guillermo at some point. But the fact that they give up a goal in the first 5 minutes but keep kind of plucking away a little bit, meet expectation, match energy that all those Tigres players are playing with, like with their hair on fire, and then feed off of their frustration because you continue to play well in spite of all of those things. And then you get a goal that comes from, Cucho, I think, playing a little bit how I expected him to play after the suspension it was like he, you know, the game immediately following that one was like, he still was a little bit ticked or whatever and had to get that out of his system and probably try to kick someone. But that comes from him, Mo Farsi's running, and then Diego Rossi being kind of in the right place at the right time, and then they finish it out on penalties. It's an exceptional win. It's singularly impressive and important relative to any of the other ones that we've seen. And then, oh, wait, sorry, we're moving on to the next one. That post-game show lasted about 45 seconds. Let's talk about Club America, you know, really kicking Caleb Porter's teeth in. The whole thing felt so weird to digest because of how we saw it in like 420 resolution, like that we were, you know, the buffering spinning wheel of death on YouTube, because for whatever reason, the frame rate coming out of Mexico for that broadcast was about as bad as I've ever seen. And then Fox has to kind of make lemonade out of, you know, stuff coming out of the trash. It just felt really weird. As soon as they dump and they go to the America game.
Yeah.
The whole thing is like watching this like monumental moment that does not get the coverage and the kind of the gravitas that it earned. It didn't receive any of that, especially kind of from, you know, the American soccer media at large. And that makes it feel weird, right? Like even now, however many days on since that,
the reaction I think was like Max Arfson's reaction was he turned around and sort of put his hands out,
yeah,
like he did wasn't sure of what just happened,
right?
And that was sort of everyone else's reaction. I think it's like, I think we won. You know, it was a weird game.
Yeah,
it really was a weird game. The first half we played poorly. And Schulte, I'll tell you what, that goal was so silly. And maybe the scouts around the world that might have seen him, you know, you know, scratching their chins. And then they watch the rest of the game. They go, oh, my God, this guy has the unique ability to just completely forget about the worst moment of his career, probably, and just put it behind him. In the 37th minute, that save that he made,
outrageous.
That saved the game.
Yeah.
You know? Because we gave away a clean breakaway. I don't know what... Tigres... I don't know how to describe them. Because you look at them and you watch them, you go, this is a good team. But they seem to sort of engage and disengage at random times.
I saw a tweet that said it looked like a team that sometimes plays well together, but they don't really like each other. That was kind of that, which I felt like... the more I thought about it, the more I liked that idea.
Yeah, where Gignac was offside when he got the stupid pass from the kid. Obviously, he was like, what are you doing
passing with me?
I'm offside.
Right?
Shoot the stinking ball.
Yeah.
That would have changed the game, too.
Even the square pass that results in the Schulte save is an underhit pass that if the guy just shoots it himself, just side foots it into the you know, his near side post, is easier than trying to lay that off for whoever was there. And it was like another moment. I sometimes think it reminds me a little bit of like when we see like Premier League teams come to the U.S. for the domestic tours, and you see guys like the veterans who are just out there kind of going through the motions, and then the young kids who try too hard. That was a good example of what I felt like was a younger player trying too hard with a domestic player who was going through the motions, right? Or a veteran player that was going through the motions. But also the fact that Schulte is on that outside foot to be able to be really dynamic on that right leg to stretch, what I was weighing, 6'5" probably, and get there, it is a testament to his ability to stay like locked in despite giving up a boneheaded goal in play earlier, right, that you just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. But their Tigre, this is what I was saying earlier, is that their lack of focus, I felt like, and then frustration from that, I felt like the crew really fed off of that. Like, mm-hmm. it was very obvious to me that they gained a lot of confidence in the home leg, dominated the game. And if Kucha's in the game, they win, 2-1, 3-1 going away, right? We said that in pod last week. They gained a lot of confidence there, knowing that, you're like, okay, we're probably better than these guys. Maybe not if we're playing 10 games, but these two that we are playing, we are absolutely better than them. And in spite of Schulte doing what I mentioned this when it happened a couple times last year, Schulte doing what he can't do, which is a left foot first touch, left foot clearance. It's got to be right foot first touch, left foot clearance. Left foot and left foot's going to be bad because you have to reset your feet no matter what. If you think about this is an audio medium, but I'm going to try and demonstrate. But if you think about taking a left touch with the instep of your left foot, whatever you're doing, it means that your right foot's on the ground, your left foot's mm-hmm. off of it. If you want to then kick the ball, you have to put your left foot off on the ground, pick your right foot up, put your right foot back down, and kick it.
And shake it all around.
Right? Yeah, there you go.
And, oh, by the way, you have about, 4/100ths of a second to be able to do that. That's a lot of time for four opportunities to leave the ground and come back on. If it's right foot, left foot, it's happening in a tenth of that, and the ball's out.
And that was the point of emphasis, obviously, in how they approached the game was, they watched the film. They go, we're going to be very forward, and we're going to try to force an error just like that. And there was almost another goal scored on a similar situation that was offside.
And this is a good example of and how it juxtaposes, I think, really well with what we saw Pablo try to do in RSL, that they really exploited the space in behind the crew left wing backs. That's what T. Grace wanted. If there was an opportunity to play the ball long because Gignac's willing runner, they did it. Regardless of if you got pressure or not, they were playing that ball. And then that's what we saw RSL do kind of ad nauseum, maybe to their detriment at times over the weekend. But I think the craziest thing for me about this T. Grace game is that And I think it speaks to everything that we've talked about with Wilfred Nancy and the buy-in and the philosophy and how everything kind of feeds off of the energy that he is giving and how the players have absorbed that and absolutely run with it, that we still want to play this way. On occasion, it's going to result in us looking stupid and we're going to give up bad goals. But we know that if we factor that into the model, so to speak, we're still going to get things on the back end, get opportunities on the back end that outweigh the negative possibilities. And that's exactly what happened. It's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was, and obviously the shootout, it was a hot night. I think by the time we got to extra time, everybody was pretty gassed.
I think that John Strong said it was 87 degrees at kickoff.
I'm sure it was swampy too. So you get to the PKs, and Schulte saves two, and that was good enough. Cutro hits a post. I mean, I'm still shaking my head, going how, because I that first half, it was bad. But whatever he said at halftime to get everybody's brains right again, I don't know what he said. We'll never know what he said. But whatever it was, they were the right words with the right context. Because we came out and we were cool. We didn't panic.
Here's what I think he said at halftime. It was like, did you see how long they looked at the Derek Jones turnover offside goal? I think this is the conspiracy theorist in me. They looked at that play and tried to legitimize it, and that's why it took 7 minutes.
It was weird.
They looked at every angle, trying to let that goal stand, and they never found the camera angle that was just ambiguous enough to be able to make it happen.
They must have not had the beauty shot, because that would have given them the...
They did not. The camera operator from Charlotte didn't make the trip to Monterey, nor did he set up his camera, somewhere up in, the mountains of North Carolina to be able to shoot that. But the... to me, and then the fact that the half ended without taking into account the 9 minutes that it took to look at that goal, that said to me right away that something smelled a little bit. And I think Wilfred Nancy probably picked up on that. That's like, okay, we've got, there are all the reasons in the world that this isn't working for us. And yet, they're the ones that have to deal with massive expectations. They're the ones playing in front of a crowd that expects them to win every single game. And, oh, by the way, the fourth official and their best player love each other.
Yeah.
Feed off of that. When they start to get frustrated, feed off of that. And I think they absolutely positively did. Unquestionably, I think they got better because they noticed how stressed everything was, especially after that play.
We'll talk about Monterey next week. The first match is on April 24th here in Columbus. The leg two is on May 1st down there in Mexico. But just how much better is Monterey than Tigres?
I think they are, I wouldn't say significantly better, but certainly they're way more informed.
Okay.
In the, I think it's Clausura that's going on. That competition is what's going on now. Because there's Apertura, which is the front half of the league, front half of the year. Clausura is the second half, I believe. Someone can check me on that. But I believe they are higher up that table than Tigres, which I think is maybe in like sixth or seventh place right now. I think they have, they don't necessarily have like the world class player in that that Gignac is for Tigres. So I don't know if they necessarily have that like top tier one kind of guy, but their next tier down is basically like nine of their starting 11. Funes Mori, Miguel Ayun, like guys who have scored massive goals in the Premier League, played for Mexico for extended periods of time, traveled all over the world, done the whole thing.
Better team, perhaps, without a superstar, perhaps more cohesive.
I mean, yeah, and also, and I think this is important to mention, and I think it juxtaposes what we're going to talk about a little bit later. What Monterrey, what Rayados are paying this team is probably like 4x the Crew team salary total. It might be more than that. Their depth is outrageous. It's crazy. Some of the talent that kind of the greater Monterrey district creates is insane. But then they pull from all over Mexico, in some ways, you know, Central America, America at large. But they're really good. They're outstanding, well coached. And I think this is, you know, probably up for debate, but we're talking about probably a tougher stadium to play in the Estadio Universidad something or other, which is where, with the mountain in the background, the whole thing, then I think Tigres in some ways.
Well, suffice to say then that the Crew, the home result is of paramount importance.
Yeah.
So we don't do to ourselves what we did in the last series, which was to go down there with that road goal hanging over our heads and somehow figuring it out.
By the way, real quick, mea culpa. That Estadio Universidad is where Tigres plays. Okay. Estadio BBVA is where Monterrey plays.
All right. Well, we'll get more into that next week, as the match isn't until a week from Wednesday. So after all that, we're going to Salt Lake City with some guys getting the night off, some required, Cucho. But Patrick Schulte, a well-earned night off. Darlington Nagbe as well. They watched the game from the stands. It wasn't in the plan for Evan Bush to get injured, but the upshot is we learned a lot about 26-year-old Guatemalan Nicholas Hagan, who had to come off the bench and was outstanding. And I was looking into this kid. He's not a kid. He's 26. Is part of the Guatemala national team program, played in Norway, Azerbaijan, and Israel. The war there cut his time short, very short in Israel, and then he was a free agent. The Crew snapped him up. You might well wonder to yourself, why can't you just, you know, we drafted a goalie, didn't we? Can't we just develop him like we did Schulte? Why are we, I guess you got your answer as to why you brought this guy in. You saw something in him, and he helps the Crew get a road point in a game that really, of all your games, doesn't matter that much because it's against a Western Conference team. But you get that point with, you know, some of your lineup, not regulars. And I would offer that this result, maybe nobody's paying attention, but I would think that our opponents are, and they're going, gee, man, criminy. Even with all these guys missing, and their second-string goalie gets injured, and they still are with the program.
Yeah.
And it's not perfect, and we don't get a goal, but you can see that it has the same sort of feel and structure to it, you know?
I think if you're an MLS coach and advance scout a little bit, you're looking at this team going, so wait a minute. They just traveled. They left Columbus Sunday, flew to Monterey, played at like, well, I think Monterey's like at 2,100 feet. Got a result that was historic both for them and MLS. Then you fly to Salt Lake City, which is, Sandy, I think, is at 4,200 feet, 4,300, something like that. Play at altitude. You start a 38-year-old in goal, an 18-year-old who makes his MLS debut. You give up like 1 point whatever in X goals, and you don't win the game. You don't lose the game. What the hell is going on here? How do we beat these bleeping guys? It was a fascinating game. I think it might be, it's maybe the weirdest MLS game for the Crew that I can remember in a long time. Evan Bush, I think Bushy showed that he still is, you know, a freak athlete.
Do we know anything about his injury?
I've heard, I'm not at liberty to say, but I do know that one.
Is it bad?
No, I think we'll be all right. To speak to what you were talking about earlier with Hagan, that scenario right there is why you don't have a college kid who spent 3 years at Clemson, no offense to Clemson, just an example, and sitting there with no live fire reps at all, no real experience. That right there is why you actually have a guy who knows what's going on. Because Hagan comes into the game after Bush plays out of his mind.
Yeah.
The two saves that he makes there are as good as any that we've seen so far in the league. And I thought it was just outrageously unlucky that he gets hurt and has to leave.
Yeah.
So unlucky. Because I think Bushy personifies a lot of what we talk about in terms of like Crew, like ethos of that, like, that Frankie has, that Pipa picked up and kind of ran with, that Josh Williams absolutely carried. I think Ev does the exact same thing in that there's like this energetic selflessness to how he approaches everything that he does. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a coincidence that you're seeing someone of his level of experience behind Patrick Schulte having the success that Patrick is. I don't think it's a coincidence that he sits kind of behind him and being in that supportive kind of mentor role. But yeah, what an outrageous game. Taha comes in and absolutely looks the part. I don't think he stood out in a negative way in any shape,
a
form, or fashion.
A true Columbus soccer kid.
Yes.
Came up through Blast FC.
Yeah.
Because that was a club that my daughter played against. I can relate to it. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with them. He came up through that program, obviously snagged by the Crew Academy, and the rest is history at the age of 18. If you can have the rest is history at the age of 18. But this is the first real game with the first team. We did see him against Pittsburgh in that forgettable U.S. Open Cup game last year. He got in a little card trouble, but
everybody in that game.
How do you grade him? All right, for an 18-year-old?
Yeah, totally looked good. I still don't know what position he plays. Mm. I'm not super sold on an advanced role. I kind of think he's actually a kind of a deep-lying playmaker a little bit. Well, in old school, almost like this is an outrageous hyperbolic comp, but like think like Pirlo, kind of technical god who can run a little bit more, right? But that's kind of how I see him. I don't necessarily see him as a wide player. But the or like in a long-term sense, maybe in the short term, because Pirlo started as kind of a right-sided midfielder back in the day. But the I thought he did well. Playing at altitude's never easy. I think it's one of those things that unless you've ever done it, it's hard to kind of explain. The headache, the altitude headache that comes after that game is unlike anything you've ever experienced. The natural dehydration that comes from being out at altitude is also kind of a weird thing that if you've never experienced it, you don't really know how to, you have no way of preparing for it. But I thought he did well. Having some help there on the right side. And then I thought they did a really good job of connecting Sean and Aiden to him at all times. And so that he never was out on an island, so to speak. That sometimes you see Diego Rossi can sometimes be out on that island a little bit, but he never really was. So I thought he did just fine.
You mentioned Aiden,
and he probably should have scored. By the way, he's a one more, maybe slightly more dynamic stride that probably, if he's not playing at altitude, he probably does, and he probably gets on that Zawadzki pass that comes from, you know, straight run, diagonal ball, or I guess it would be diagonal run, straight ball. He probably gets on that pass into the far post and the Crew win the game.
Fewer Crew stars in the field means more opportunities for Aiden to get the hell fouled out of him again.
Isn't it crazy?
I'm tired of seeing it. Obviously, nothing is being done. I don't know that we're complaining enough about it during the week. Well, of course, we're never going to know that.
I thought the yellow card that what's-his-face got right after fouling him, kind of, I guess, would be like the second or third time in the game. I thought that kind of showed. I thought it would show the rest of the RSL players.
There was a yellow that came out awfully fast, and I was like, wow, that's new.
I kind of forget who it was.
They had nine yellows.
Yeah. I thought that would be kind of a marker to be like, okay, like, leave this dude alone. And they did not. It's one of those things where I feel like I kind of spoke to this a little bit last week that, you know, it's like the song that the Nordica sings, right? He's here, there, he's everywhere. If you are everywhere around the ball, you're just going to get fouled more. Darlington Nagbe knows that as well as anybody, better than anybody. It's going to happen, but the fact that there's a length to his tackling ability that to me reminds me a lot of Artur, even though Artur's a lot taller than him and longer. That puts him in position to be just slightly quicker, speed of thought quicker in some of those plays, and that's why he's getting absolutely lit up a lot, because he's in positions that no one else can be in the league. So a lot of these guys, if it's Diego Chara or Ricky Puig or Kubo from FC Cincinnati, they're getting there and they're tackling the ball away, or they're, at the very least, they're putting pressure on the play. With Aiden, the ball's gone, and all you're doing is just crushing him. And it's because everything's that, like, 1%, 2% quicker. And I think that just speaks to the quality. But like we've said now however many times, you got to be, if you're Bez and Nancy, you got to be on the horn to MLS. But protect my guy here, because he's getting crushed.
Might be time for him pretty soon, too.
And he's a catch and release. Like, he's very quick on the catch and release. Like, Darlington getting fouled, it's kind of like back when Eddie Gavin used to be the most fouled man in MLS for, like, I don't know, 3-4 years straight. Is because he has that ability. He's more like Eddie Gavin. He holds onto the ball and then passes.
Yeah.
like you said with Aiden, he doesn't hold on to the ball long enough, and he's getting hacked. And that, they're really both getting hacked all the time.
Yeah,
Kuchma's getting hacked all the time.
Well, I think it's very obvious to me that teams are feeling like the only way to break up the build up, the rhythm, is to be physical. I think it's obvious as an elephant. And those two guys specifically are paying the price. That's what that you sign up for that when you play that position.
Well, he will get a day off anyway. I mentioned that it was time for a day off, but he's going to get a day off against Monterey in game one. Right? Or did he already sit out that red card?
He didn't play in
he didn't play in the second leg.
I'm wondering if maybe, I don't know, he's probably, you'd probably have to drag him off the field, but I think if anybody needs some load management, just a little, kind of give him a mental break, if nothing else, maybe find an opportunity for him.
You have Zawadzki back.
Yeah.
You have Derek Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, you can spell him some. I don't know if you'll agree to be spelled an entire game, but you can spell him some.
I mean, I've been blown away with what Chris Schenberger and the physio staff, the fitness staff of the Crew, have been able to do in terms of promoting recovery. Whatever is going on, it's outrageously good, and it's about as it might be best in MLS. What they're doing in terms of standard SOP, what the protocol, standard practice, and then the extra 5% is crazy good. I do think I thought it was interesting the fact that the crew went to Monterey Sunday afternoon. I spoke to this on the pod last week. It was so unique. I've never seen that, you know, or at least it's very rare. A team going in 36 hours early to acclimatize.
Yeah.
And then they go from Monterey to Salt Lake City. I couldn't tell you the last time I heard of an MLS team on a 6-day extended trip. It never happened under Caleb Porter. The longest trip we ever had in Caleb Porter's tenure was going to San Jose. We were gone 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't have a domestic comp or an international comp as part of MLS play. But, like, whatever they're doing, it seems to be working in a pretty exceptional way.
Real quick, another guy that I want your thoughts on is Philip Quinton. We haven't seen him in a long time. I thought, from my sort of amateur eye, that he looked better than I thought he was able to at this point. How would you grade his performance?
I think the Phil Quinton Crew experiment ended in Salt Lake City.
You think so? Because I'm just...
It didn't look good.
Like, I was expecting worse than that, I think.
Maybe that's fair.
And so my expectations were fairly low, and I thought, it seems to be going okay. What did you see that bothered you?
I thought it was interesting that he was in the right center back spot. Whenever we saw him play a significant role with Crew, was in that middle position. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Camacho's got that on a stranglehold. You know, 6 years from now, when the Crew have won their fifth MLS Cup, and 45-year-old Rudy Camacho is captaining the team to their seventh MLS Cup victory and second CONCACAF Champions Cup win. Maybe we're not talking about poor Phil Quinton. It didn't look good. Technically, a problem. There were times where there was a really telling play in the second half. There's a second ball turnover that falls to Phil that Max Darfson wins. Plays back to Phil, and Max does kind of a butt shoulders to the touchline, turn and go. And Phil passes the ball right to the spot that he just left, out of bounds, RSL ball.
Okay.
And like that play right there is where that kind of nuanced bit of ball retention, possession being the priority, sucking the opponent back into your personal space, that right there is like where you do it. You step on the ball and you slow it down. And instead, it was like this panic sense of urgency, okay, get the ball out from under my feet kind of moment. And he kicked it to nobody. And there were a couple different plays where it felt like he was just kicking the ball out of bounds because that was the only thing he felt comfortable doing.
Okay.
You know, it didn't look very good. It didn't look very good. I would be shocked. I would be genuinely surprised to see him back up on the field at any point the rest of the year, barring some crazy injury or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I was thinking of it more as like, well, I didn't see anything terribly disastrous.
There was no bad turnover. He didn't get beaten behind, anything like that. But like in terms of what's the standard now, right? The standard has been raised, right?
Yeah.
For those three spots.
Yeah.
What Steven has done, what Rudy's done, what Maltz's done, the baseline, the bare minimum, that barometer is higher at a level that I think Phil can reach at the moment.
Yeah. Even Shiburko was on Team of the Week last week.
Yeah. Showing that technical quality, and I think, which we all know is there, right?
Yeah.
The big thing is, like, can you meet it? Can you meet the physicality of it?
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he couldn't, period, point blank. I think in stretches this year, he hasn't. But for whatever reason, the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, maybe you're seeing a little bit trending, a little bit of a trend in the right direction there. I'm in it. I was kind of out a little bit. I'm, you know, Godfather 3, the only line worth mentioning in that movie. Just when I thought I'm out, they pull me back in.
Yeah.
I might be back in on Shiburko.
Okay.
I think I'm back in.
Well, we know what he does well, and we know what he doesn't do well. In the air, it's a little bit of a dicey proposition, but yeah, I mean, he has looked better. So, the Crew get Portland Timbers, a rare appearance from Portland Saturday at 7:30. Along for the bus ride, so to speak, for Portland is 38-year-old Diego Chara, who is the only player, as far as I can't think of anybody else, who played in the 2015 MLS Cup here.
Yeah.
And against the Crew. And we're forgetting all about that right now. We don't want to talk about that. But he's still there.
Isn't that crazy?
Still there. Start most of the games at the age of 38. Must still be a contributor. 2-2 tie. Mm-hmm. Against LAFC at home. They sit near the bottom of the West, but it's...
The West is weird right now, right?
It's
Seattle's
really,
down there, too.
Yeah, it's really congested. I mean, you get a couple of results, and you can bullet up the standings.
The reanimated collective corpse of LA Galaxy is all of a sudden showing the, you know, the Landon Donovan, Kobe Jones kind of era of LA Galaxy form that you expect from them after being in the, you know, part of a collective dumpster fire for the better part of 4 to 5 years.
I don't know if you saw any of the highlights of this particular match you saw it, but I think Portland was hard done on the red card to their goalie, Maxime Crepeau, the Canadian, who, he took the guy out to get the red card, but the play was clearly offside, I think. And that should have never happened. It should have been offside.
Isn't it crazy, too? Like, if you think about that guy has had such a wild and interesting career in the last couple of years. Breaks his leg in MLS Cup final as the LAFC goalkeeper. Leaves a game. LAFC go on to win that game while he's watching in the hospital. And then they fire him, essentially, for reasons unknown. Bring in Hugo Lloris, who's getting paid like 8% of what he got paid in England. Why he's there is beyond understanding. And he goes back to LAFC. He's hanging out with whatever their supporters section is before the game. And then gets bounced for a crappy call. He's had a wild 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. That guy's, I find him to be fascinating.
Well, we won't see him on Saturday.
I agree. I thought that was a weird play. There are a lot of weird plays throughout the whole weekend. Saw another weird one the other day with Atlanta and Philly in the throw-in and ending the game well before it should have been ended on basically on a 5v4 with Philly against Atlanta, and the ref just blows the whistle. Some crazy stuff has gone on in the last 48 hours. But the... this is, I think it's an Evander for Portland.
He looks good.
Is it? He's the best attacking midfielder in the league. I think pretty clearly, yes.
Cool name, too.
Yeah. I think Carlos Hill still, for me, is probably the standard. But he's also a different player than Evander is. Some of what he does, there are a couple goals that he scored last year that is just like, screw this. I'm better than everybody. I'm just going to kick this into the upper corner of the top corner.
He just about
just
got
because
an
I want to, and I'm tired of running around everywhere.
He just about got an Olympico in that game too. The shot was really long, and on the highlight package, they didn't show a close up.
Yeah,
and I realized there was a guy there at the near post, but he nearly spun that one right in. His corner kicks are really good. His penalties are really good. Yeah. I mean, this guy can play, and he will have to be accounted for.
I think it's also interesting a little bit with what Phil Neville has done, where everybody hated that hire in Portland. Supporters protested, partly due to some of the women's soccer comments that he had in England, where he's actually been kind of shockingly upfront and apologetic about those. I remember the quote was like, it was wrong then and it was wrong now, which I actually think is a great way to kind of...
Yeah.
Mea culpa that a little bit and explain yourself. That's a pretty big 180 a little bit. They were not happy. And obviously there's a lot that's gone on in that, not just that franchise, but with the Thorns as well.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I still think it's kind of crazy. I love the progression of playmakers that we've seen in MLS. In terms of 10s specifically, that kind of exist franchise to franchise. And Portland manages to reload with another outrageous 10 after having, a kind of a Hall of Fame tier one guy for basically a decade. He's a special guy. He's their far and away their best player. He's a top five player in the league, maybe top three. And he can change the game pretty much whenever he wants if he gets an inch of space. It's got to be Aiden doing all the Aiden stuff for the crew in this game because he's like that type of player. You know what I mean? Where it's, Aiden putting him in his pocket a little bit. That's the only way the crew get a result.
Why only two wins on the season then for Portland?
Well, I think because they're lacking a little bit on the front end. Tip of the spear sucks, so to speak, outside of him. But I also think there's a sluggishness a little bit to the Western Conference that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Seattle's only won once this year.
Yeah.
Despite still having basically everybody on that team. I think that the
LAFC hasn't looked good.
Yeah, the RSL game is a perfect example of that, which I think RSL is probably the best team in the Western Conference, and they look like dog crap against the Crew,
did.
Right? Like, yeah. There's a sluggishness
against Crew 1.5.
Yeah, right.
Not quite Crew 2, but yeah, not quite Crew 1.
The copy, the, you know, like Diet Crew, but, you know, copy Baros 0, you know, whatever. I don't know. But, like, I can't really make sense of it. I think if Houston gets their shit together, they're going to run away with the Western Conference. Okay. St. Louis maybe a little bit too. But I think all the parts are there outside of maybe a true out-and-out 9. But, Gonzalo Higuain isn't walking through that door for Phil Neville either. So, like, I think they've got some things to maybe figure out a little bit there too. But again, I think it speaks a little bit to the Western Conference at large, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Analytically, it's all over the place. If you search the table by analytics, it's completely different than the actual, point-driven table that we have right now.
So maybe we just need more games for it to all to play out.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough. Just worth noting, Felipe Mora has scored 3 straight for Portland, whatever that's worth. But definitely, Evander is the guy to watch. I remember Evander Holyfield boxing on my Sega. I beat that game. That's when I was single and wasn't dating anyone. And that's what I put my focus on. And I accomplished my goal. So I got that going for me, Sam.
I just think
there was the boxers that you fight first on Evander Holyfield boxing. There's one. His name is Glass Joe.
And, isn't he the first guy in like the list?
Yeah. You just you pummel him in about 30 seconds, and then you move on. I didn't even really like boxing that much, but I like that game.
The other thing with Porter, really quick,
that I
think is interesting. Defensively, super vulnerable. Okay.
Yeah.
I believe they. I think they're last in the league.
Okay.
New England might be last in the league in terms of X goals against. Right. This is an opportunity for me in this game. If Aiden does what I think he's going to do, because I think Aiden's in more form than anyone else on this team, maybe other than Schulte's probably one, but I think Aiden maybe 1A, but Aiden's 1B. This is an opportunity to throw some lighter fluid a little bit on what's maybe been a sputtering fire in terms of the crew in the final third. Haven't won a game in, over a month now. Done just enough to continue to give results. They're not very good in the back end. If the crew catch a little something here, Diego Rossi puts a couple in the back of the net, does a 2-1, 2 goals, 1 assist kind of thing. Cucho is... Was Cucho out for this game? I can't. He should be out, right?
Yes.
So, if there's Diego in the right spot, we didn't really talk about Jason Russell Rowe, which is a different. That's an issue there, but Matan getting feet under him a little bit. There's an opportunity to win this game going away 3-0, 4-1, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I agree.
Kickstart it a little bit. Jumpstart the
sit on Evander. You don't let him beat you. If somebody else beats you, I guess so be it. But that's the guy that you want to contain. So we do that. I think we get a good result. And it's weird to think that we haven't won a league game in so long. Because I feel like, we're doing fine. You know, we're in good shape. We're right there in the Eastern Conference. But it has been a little bit. It's Nancy managing the workload and the match congestion this club has had to deal with about as well as you can do it.
Red Bulls.
Yeah.
March 16th.
Yeah. We played really well that night. So I'm looking for that sort of effort. You know, they get a little time to breathe this week that they haven't had recently. And prepare fully for Portland. Do all your game planning for that. I certainly like our chances. Brett, what's your pick for this one?
I think it's interesting too that it feels like a luxury to have the break because of everything that they've done for the last 17 days. I think they could go in and smack the crap out of Portland. Like I could absolutely see this being like a multi-goal game. There's something about Diego Rossi in the touches in the opposition's box, and the goal I think against Tigres is exactly the type of goal that the soccer IQ and just the fact that he was there to be able to take a heavy touch from Mo and kick it in the back of the net. That right there is like what you're looking for in terms of a player of his caliber. But there's also still that like lack of edge. He gets a breakaway against RSL and they don't even get a shot at him.
Yeah.
Right? Like this to me is like the Diego Rossi kickstarting, jump starting what's been a slow start to the year. I think he gets at least one, maybe two.
All right.
It's 3-0 crew in this game for me.
All right. Fair enough, Sam.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning the same way, though. I think I'm almost starting to wonder, just based on how Diego Rossi has scored his last 5 goals, maybe?
Yeah.
Is that it's always been in right place, right time, but kind of like either poaching a rebound or doing
a junk goal.
Junk goal. And it's like, why doesn't he play to that more than trying to be a Cucho or trying to be a Matan or whatever? Play so that you're there for the rebound more than you are for the front. And I think He could do that, but he has to change his mentality that he is doing that instead.
One thing that I think you keep an eye on a little bit, Jason Russell Rowe, I thought, did not look very good against RSL. first touch is bad right now. Does not look dangerous. It's obviously the running and the work rate is still really great. But there were a couple of plays where the crew needed a first touch in terms of hold up play to alleviate some pressure against RSL. And he kicked it 10 yards away from him, and it was an auto turnover.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked if we see him sit in this game and you get a funky front three of Rossi running through the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, if you look at I've said this in the past, the LAFC Rossi goals all come from him running through the middle off of Vela.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever that third person might be, I'm not really sure who it is.
Hinostroza, probably.
It's probably Hinostroza, I would assume. If he's trying to beat guys wide and then finding cutbacks or balls to back that back stick ball,
mm-hmm.
like that's Diego doing Diego stuff when he was, you know, winning the golden boot. That's why I think there's an opportunity. That front three of Marino, Matan, and Diego running through the middle, I think there's an opportunity to get at least one, probably two in this game.
Close to Brett's prediction here. I'm going to say 3-1.
That's where I am, too. 3-1.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going. Real quick before we go, what is this about MLS, again, changing DP rules, anything to it? What's happened?
So the
Miami doesn't have enough DPs to compete against Mexican teams.
Isn't it weird, too, by the way, that they still have a game in hand on the entire league, and in some positions they actually have two?
Uh-huh.
Explain that one to me.
Yeah.
That one doesn't make much sense. And by the way, they played like three Western Conference teams. Weird. Feels weird.
Yeah.
You know what would make Don Garber's head explode? Is the final being in Columbus again and not include Miami.
That would be great. The, you know, I'm still pretty undecided on, so like what, like the roster rules, I think, ask a larger question, which is, what's MLS's greatest strength? Okay. And the more I think about that, the more I think the parity of the league collectively in its history is MLS's greatest strength. The fact that you, on February 27th, when the season begins, for the most part, if you do it the right way, you have a great chance of winning or having a relatively successful season. And that is not the case in basically every other domestic league, professional soccer domestic league across the world. If you fudge the roster rules a little bit to lean one way or another in terms of these second team owning, perhaps trying to hide some tax money, NFL owners, if you lean a little bit towards the ones, giving the ones who want to spend, are willing spenders, if you allow them the opportunity to gain an edge because they're willing to shell out $5, $6, $7 more million a year, I don't necessarily know if that's actually good for the long-term health of the league. Tata Martino said, I think, following the Monterrey game, the Rayados game, basically, like, if you want to see us do well and do well in CONCACAF Champions League, you got to let it be a free market, which is just horseshit from him. Like, I think that's just hot garbage. I hate it. I think the four DPs make a lot of sense in terms of, like, you know, the M in MLS standing for, you know, marketing league soccer, right? That makes a lot of sense. Mm. But if we're talking about trying to be a fan-focused, fan-centric league, this doesn't necessarily do that in terms of on-field results. I'm willing to admit and concede that might be a recency bias opinion and perspective a little bit, because I do think the Haslams do actually fall into the group of willing spenders. So if, you know, that fourth DP is, I don't know, Tim Ream, right? And all of a sudden it looks really good, you know, really dynamic in the defensive third. Like, Tim Ream's a bad example, but I'm throwing it out there anyway. You know, maybe we're talking about a different thing. But my initial reaction to it is very much, again, it's you know, don't tinkle on my head and tell me it's raining. This is thumb on the scale to allow Jorge Mas and Inter Miami to be able to throw Luis Suarez another comma in his salary, another zero at the end of it. And that's the only reason why it exists. And I think that smells the high heaven, and it sucks.
All right. Fair enough. We'll leave it at that. We made our picks. We look forward to Portland on Saturday. Next week, again, we will spend much more time breaking down Monterey, the Champions Cup semifinal. It's a lot, but it's going to be
fun. For the first time ever.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun. And we'll get to that next week here, right here at our home away from home, Saucy Brew Works. And we thank them for having us. If your brew works, make it saucy, as Ori used to say.
What do you think Murph is doing in Europe right now?
He's at the Saucy Brew Works UK.
Does Murph have a fanny pack on right now?
Yes.
A man purse. Probably.
Yes.
It's somewhere in the greater UK.
It's probably about midnight over there right now.
Well, the pubs are still open.
It's a five hour time difference.
The Isle of Albion. Yeah. Murph is absolutely perusing the best in single pool, non nitrogen pumps that exist in the.
I hope he's having some fish and chips too.
Yeah.
So good.
I dig it.
So good over there. All right. With that, Murph will be back next week. He's in England. Bart is at his board meeting. He's still bored at his board meeting. We miss you guys. We'll talk to you next week. For Brett, for Sam, I'm Brian. Thanks for listening to the Massport Podcast. Like and subscribe if you would, and we'll talk to you next week.